Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of the Training Up podcast.
Hey guys.
What have you been doing this week? Anything new or just doing the same old stuff?
How about you start first?
Okay. Oh, for the past week, I've been doing a lot more sports. I went to the basketball courts to play basketball with some people. I haven't played basketball in a group setting for a while now. Yeah, it was generally fun because when I usually play basketball, it's either with my dad or I play it alone. And it's basically doing shooting and stuff, not really having anyone to play.
But, like body contact.
Yeah, yeah.
A real game.
Like a team sport, like how it's supposed to be. But I went to my normal old basketball court, but the primary school there, it's under renovation. I think they want to take the COVID lockdown situation into advantage. So they're going to renovate the basketball court. So I went to another basketball court that's pretty far away. It's near a dog park. It's where a lot of people are at. And there's a lot of people there. And yeah, I played with them. It was generally fun, but it was very tiring because I'm quite tall and so I play the center.
So I have no idea what that means.
So when other people shoot the ball, if it doesn't go in, I have to fight for the rebound.
Oh, okay.
So I stand under the hoop, basically. Okay. So I have to, you know, fight the other big guys. but, you know, I'm not that big. I'm just tall, but I'm really skinny. I have to guard a guy that is very heavy, but he ends up being 14 only. It was very, very tiring.
How did you start basketball? Why did you always play with your dad?
Oh, okay. Right, so how I first started basketball, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I started playing basketball when I was in year one. And it was when I was still in China. My dad was a professional basketball player.
Professional?
Yeah, professional. He went to the Sports Academy of China.
Yeah, but I thought professional sports player means like being in the nation's team.
He was.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like, is there
He was in the Shanghai Touch.
Grade?
The Shanghai like, Sharks. Shanghai Da Sha Yu.
Okay.
It's where Yao Ming first played.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
Like his coach and Yao Ming's coach are the same coach.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and the coach was actually the one said to my dad, you should not keep doing this because you don't have the talent. Yeah, he was quite strict.
Heartbreaking.
No, like it was.
I guess it's a good thing.
Yeah, like should be normally coaches don't tell that to the players because the coach wants to have a wide variety of players to like talents, even though, you know, you're not going to make to the final battle. But
to the top tier.
Yeah. And it like how the coach actually said to my dad, it was my dad giving him like a bottle of very expensive alcohol and said, coach, do you think that I should keep doing this? Just give me your honest opinion. And the coach is like, no, you should not keep doing this because you don't have the talent and you don't have the body.
Mm.
Yeah.
So do you think like physique is very important?
It is very, very important. Yes. Oh, okay. Like in the sport setting.
Is that why you suffered on the ground over the week?
Yeah. Well, my dad and I had very different type of physique. Oh. Like body build wise, his
bottom half
is quite stable. He is very, very stable. Like his legs is really sturdy. Thick. Yeah. And my body type is like my mom mostly, but my dad wasn't that tall. That was the main reason. And he was a defense player. He was in charge of the organizing attacks and stuff. But he wasn't talented by the words of my coach. Yeah. And so my dad retired and he went to university, but he still, you know, still know how to play basketball. The reason why he joined the university is because the university said you have to play for our basketball team.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And so after a while he just quit the basketball team.
That's how my dad got into his uni as well.
Yeah, for soccer, right?
Mm.
Yeah. And yeah, so in year one, he started coaching me basketball. You know, a year, like I was really, really young, but he gave me like a standard NBA ball, which is size 7. It was bigger than my whole entire.
Did he start training you for fun, or was it like?
No, he was a hardcore training. he wanted me to be good at basketball because he thinks that it will be a good social sport. And because in China, like if you don't know, they actually have a standard exam for basketball. Do you know?
In primary school?
No, in high school, in Gaozhong, like in senior high school. So the two things that they have to do is swimming and basketball. All of them, they have to pass.
Oh, like the PE exam?
Yeah, like they have to pass those two for boys at least.
Is that from middle school to high school?
No, it's for Gaokao Biye.
That's not swimming.
There is swimming. I think it's in Shanghai only.
I think it really depends on school. General public schools don't.
Like every Shanghai school has to do. They have to pass swimming and
now,
basketball.
Now even, or was it like
I'm not sure about
when
now.
You were growing up?
I'm not sure about now. Yeah.
Because I knew about basketball and it was actually, it started in middle school.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
It starts in the middle school to high school entry exam.
I think
but
swimming,
I'm not sure about,
swimming like is only for Shanghai.
Maybe we should have looked this up.
No, it's okay. Then he started training me, and so he basically trained me how to pass the ball for like 2 years.
Why?
Because he wanted me to have a very stable foundation.
Oh, okay.
Because it like I was basically like a blank paper. If the posture is wrong, you can't really, it like it's become very hard to fix. So he wanted the foundation to be solid. Yeah, and all the way up until high school, he trained me by himself. And by the time I was high school, my foundation is like it's very solid. Like it, like my ball handling alone is very solid. But the problem is I haven't played a real basketball match at all. Yeah,
like forever.
Since,
okay, so you've always had good basics.
Yeah,
like
I've always had good basics.
Yeah, but
and
you've
the
never
first
really
time,
played.
And the first time that I actually step on the court and play a match, I played awful. Because
because you've never had any experience. Okay.
When the team game. When the opponents actually come at you, they actually apply a force. They don't stop. Okay. And once you have that body contact and that energy, your posture start to be weird. And
or maybe it's just that you have to pay attention to so many different things.
It's not that. It's not that. Like, it's just that when it's one-on-one, people will start defend you like with their life, and you have to get past them and you have to apply a force. When you apply a force, your other posture will go blah, and the way that you shoot the ball will start to go weird, and it doesn't work anymore.
Okay.
Yeah. And so my dad realized that. And the second thing is that my stamina was really, really bad. Because basketball requires a lot of stamina. And after a few rounds, I just got really, really tired. Yeah. And after a while, I improved quite fast because my foundation was really good. And yeah, I played pretty good, I'd say.
So was that... So did you keep playing after coming to Australia?
Yeah, my first basketball match was in high school in year 8.
Oh, okay.
It was in high school, yeah. And I played all the way up until year 10.
Like in an actual team?
Yeah, but school basketball.
Oh, okay. I never knew that.
Mm.
Okay. Well, for reference, I met Tianyu in year 11. So.
Yeah.
So why did you stop? Because by the time I got to know you, I always thought you just played tennis more seriously.
Yeah, I stopped at basketball because it was mainly because it was a time clash with the working hours that I was going to do. Because the basketball match is always going to be on Saturday morning.
Oh, okay.
And it was a time clash. And in year 10, before year 10, I was definitely the tallest player. I had a very big advantage. But by the time we get to year 10... Other students start to, you know, shoot up and they become as tall or more taller than me. Like how, for example. Yeah, and height doesn't make a massive difference in basketball. Yeah.
So both of us had our growth spurt early.
Quite early, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Yeah, you were really early for a boy.
I was really early for a boy. And
but it was also kind of short. Like from the timeline that you described to me, it seems like you were pretty average height during primary school, and then for early middle school you had your growth spurt.
In year six, I grew 10 centimeters.
Yeah. And then you quickly stopped in year 10.
Yeah, well, my mom and dad both are not that tall, right?
No, but it's still very early, I feel like. Yeah. Because usually, a lot of boys started growing fast during year 10. Okay.
So
we're pretty similar. I also was growing the most during year 5, 6. Yeah.
I think it's a good thing because I smashed everyone on sports day in primary school
because of the early... That's why I told you I was...
the fastest runner in sports day, right?
When I was in primary school. But I was always the tallest. And actually, same thing happened to me because I was in year 6, 7 when I went to primary school in Australia. And by that time, the Australian girls have started growing a lot taller and a lot stronger than me. I stopped being the tallest, the biggest girl in the class. This is a quite similar situation.
Oh, just add a note on how serious my dad was at training me at basketball. In high school, he thinks that he watched the first two games. I played terrible. So he was like, no, I got to fix my son up. So he woke up with me every single morning at 6 o'clock. And we went around, we ran for stamina. We shoot the ball. He defend me. We basically play real match. And we need to get the real game experience. And I improved quite a lot.
Sounds like Tianyu's peak performance period.
Yeah, I can even dunk at that point.
Yeah. Why can't you dunk now?
Because I have no butt muscles now. I can't jump really high now.
What if you were to train the same way now?
Three months I can dunk, I'm pretty sure.
You could have done that during lockdown.
But why? Well, there's no motivation to keep going.
This is your motivation.
Okay.
The training arc podcast.
Okay, so by the beginning of
next year,
I should be able to touch the rim at least. Okay.
Let's make it a thing, and we'll schedule in the podcast. First podcast of 2022 is going to be Tianyu's whether or not Tianyu can do a dunk.
not a dunk. Just touch a rim first, okay? I don't want to set myself too high, but 3 months should be okay.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Cool. We got some content planned.
Yep.
Okay. And I guess this really fits with our training arc theme as well. Yeah.
And another thing is that how I got into basketball, I wasn't really interested in basketball previously because my dad was kind of forcing me to play basketball. Mm. I like to play sports that are non-contact. Like if you have a net in between me and the opponents, that's perfect. Mm. Like badminton and table tennis and I don't know, chess, for example. But the reason why I really got into basketball is I first started watching NBA. I thought that was a really, really cool sport. And then it was Slam Dunk, the anime. Like the manga, it was one of the best thing I've ever watched, and it was also the first time that I actually stepped onto the court for the real basketball match because the feeling is different. It's very, very 刺激, you know,
exciting.
It's not
stimulating.
Yes, very stimulating.
It's
like you have
getting
to
on stage.
Yes, it's like things change every single second.
It's unpredictable.
Yes, and you have to work with your teammates, and it was a really exciting.
That's what
feeling.
I was saying. Like, there's a lot more to think about when you're actually on the court.
I wouldn't say that. No. because my foundation, my passing, my skill level.
Okay, so it becomes kind of like second nature. You can intuitively respond.
Kind of, yeah.
But there's a lot of, well, then it's just like getting there the was basically my stamina to apply
and your... my physical strength, basically.
Right.
Like, what's the weakness?
Weakness.
Well, which get onto the theme of this podcast, this episode of the podcast. We're going to talk about what is your biggest weakness. I thought about this episode title because I think that is a very common question that people ask in an interview setting. Yeah, people get asked in an interview setting and often catches a lot of people off, mm-hmm. right? Because you can't really say that, oh, I'm a perfectionist or I work too hard or something, because that's so cringy. And you can't really say a weakness that will, you know, greatly impact your influence, like how your boss perceive you. Then you might not get the job if you've been too honest.
No, it's not about whether or not you've been very honest. It's actually about, so I think the common advice about this type of questions was that, number one, you need to be very genuine. So you need to make sure it's a genuine weakness or, short of strength. So you can't be... So you can't say a weakness that's not really a weakness, like being a perfectionist. Being a perfectionist maybe is okay, depending on how you frame it. But saying that you work too hard or you are just too good at something or too, you know...
Too work-oriented,
Like an answer that is not genuine enough, but more towards trying to give yourself... I think I know, like it's like saying my imperfection is
perfection.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Cringy.
Giving yourself credit for something that you shouldn't for a situation that you shouldn't be. You should be, the first advice is to be very genuine and give a legit response, but the second part is to actually not be so there's like different types of weaknesses, and so if we divide things into two main categories, the first is the type of weakness that affects with your your core values, and you shouldn't discuss things that show weakness in that sense. Or,
for example, could you give me an example, like core? What kind of core values are we talking about? Personality wise?
No. So you know, like philosophically, the things that deal with value. So your value of this world and of human, and of life, etc. It should be correct. It should be at least ethical and correct and righteous. You can't say something that dismisses you otherwise. Like, for example, if you don't have the work ethic, you can't just be like, I am super lazy and I can't maintain a good. So for example, you can't be like, I tell a lot of lies, you know.
Okay. Yeah. You're okay. Not righteous, right. Sure.
You know. But
I think that doesn't apply, right? Because the person that lies would always think of a really good excuse to lie. Like in their mind, they don't lie for the evil. They lie for, I don't know, for easiness, or they can.
No, we're just talking about the answer, answering okay, sure. to that question. Yep. So
what's your second
part? So the first part is, so number one is to be genuine, but you can't be too genuine that it shows off maybe the actual bad things of core value. And if you have any, of course. And so on the other hand, the other type of... answers that you can give regarding weakness is things that are more like practicable. They're more like, how do I say this?
Your shortness of something, right?
Yes, things that you can make as a goal to improve on.
Yep.
And
I think that the person that's asking you is really trying to ask you what have you done to overcome this?
Yeah, exactly.
And,
or like, what effort have you made in terms of trying to mitigate the effects of this on how you how you handle yourself in a work situation.
Yeah.
Something like
that. And when I ask this question to Catherine, she can't really think of anything for now. So I think that as the podcast goes on, I think you would have, it would probably ring a bell in your past if you have anything.
But we can start with, so yeah, so Tian Yu really wanted to talk about this because he actually had a answer prepared, although it could be it's very
not really
niche.
It's not really an answer prepared because...
It's an answer that you've used in interviews when this
I've
kind
had
of question
to
came
it.
Up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I used it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it is a prepared answer.
Yeah,
for
kind
you.
Of, yeah.
Yeah. But most importantly, he wanted to talk about the experience around this, right?
Because so, it's... Okay, so from a very young age, I actually stutter quite a lot during when I was in year 3 to year 9-ish. Mm-hmm. I stuttered quite a bit.
Mm.
So now I think it's gotten a lot better. But because when I was editing the audio part for the podcast, I can still hear myself stutter. And sometimes it's unintentional. Sometimes I didn't notice, but sometimes I know. And I still have to make an effort to cut those part out.
But I feel like you notice it more because you really care about this issue of yours.
I
or you
think
really
that
see
if
it
you...
as an issue.
Really?
Mm. Because in everyday talking with you, and I think, yeah, people around you, including myself included, would think it's not as much of an
no.
issue.
Like the biggest criticisms I got for my stuttering is from my parents. And they actually really pressured me.
Isn't that also because like they share your perspective of wanting to get rid of this problem?
My mom never had
a problem
with stuttering, but my dad does.
Yeah, so it's,
yeah.
I think it's to do with your attitude towards this.
Yeah, probably.
Like personally, I don't mind it. And I don't think, I think a lot of other people wouldn't really mind either. But if you really... see, like if your attitude toward it is very negative, then you really notice.
Like when I first met you, my stuttering was already a lot better. And so you can't really notice my stuttering.
Okay, so how did you overcome or how did that improve?
How did it improve? When my mom, like
actually,
I kind
do
of,
you want to go like
yeah,
all
how
the way
I first
to the
started,
beginning?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah,
how
yeah.
I first started it.
Like what's, and, was there any...
It was kind of, first of all, my dad stutter, and when I was young, I often imitate him, and my mom always said that you shouldn't imitate dad.
Actually, why did you imitate?
Because I thought it was funny.
Yeah, then I think that just feeds into this whole attitude. Like, of course, if you were trying to make fun of him because of stuttering, he is going to get you back. Like,
no, I think it's when people stutter, they often seem more unconfident.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, also, yeah, again, attitude thing, right?
Yeah.
Because he thinks it's...
Maybe
a problem,
I'm too harsh on the situation, like
I
you
think?
Think
you are.
Okay,
yeah.
Maybe. But so I first started stuttering when I was in kindergarten. And
oh.
Yeah, it was really early.
Why did you say like year 3? Was that a memorable time?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, so at first, my stuttering wasn't that bad.
Okay.
It was only a couple of syllables that I would stutter in Chinese, of course. But when I got
oh,
to...
Oh, so was it different?
Yeah, it was
English?
Different. It was different.
Interesting.
Yeah. As you get better at a language, as you get faster and you don't have to think a lot more about a language, you start to stutter, at least from my experience. I know it's really interesting, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I observed when I was reading scripts and lines, when I was reading and when I was singing, I never stutter. It was only that when I, you know, do free speech or have a conversation like this, I will stutter. And this is actually a very, very common, like in actors and in like actors and singers, when they get on stage, they don't stutter at all. But as soon as they get off stage, they start stuttering.
Is that to do with paying more attention, like being more focused?
I'm not sure. I'm actually not sure. And I think a really good reason is when you are doing a speech or when you sing, there is a particular rhythm that you have to follow. And the rhythm is there. You might not pay attention to it, but it is there. But when you actually speak, you don't, it's your rhythm, right? And sometimes the rhythm, when there's a word stuck, you're just trying to get it out as fast as I can. And sometimes you just stutter. But let's get back. So it was in kindergarten when I first stuttering, and it wasn't that severe. But in year three, the first person that I noticed that actually laughed at my stuttering was my math teacher. Yeah, I was organizing like the workbook for the classroom, and I have to give it to her in her office, and I was like, this is the workbook, and I stuttered when I was handed in, and she laughed at me.
Was it because you were nervous?
No, I wasn't nervous. Okay. It was just a genuine stutter. People don't just
genuine.
Yeah, it wasn't like it was a normal genuine stutter.
Genuine means like truthful.
It was a normal stutter.
Okay.
Yeah, and I wasn't sure. You can't really pinpoint like the reason why people stutter. You just do. And yeah, and I felt embarrassed, and I wasn't too much. I didn't pay attention about it too much.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but at that point I felt that that my stuttering was kind of became more and more
noticeable.
Yeah, it was also the time when I started to speak a little faster. Yeah, and because of my stuttering, I was a really shy kid. I try to keep my answers and my sentence to one word, as less as possible. That's why throughout primary school up until year three, I didn't have any friends. No friends at all, probably. And it was only started in year four when, you know, I had the conscious of, you know, I want to make friends now. I started to make really good friends with other boys. But
why boys?
Because in China primary school, when you play with the boys, you are considered the cool kid.
Right.
And I was pretty athletic, and yeah, I wanted to fit in.
Okay.
And yeah, I would say stuttering actually changed my personality quite a bit.
Wait, that actually reminds me of something.
Yeah, go on.
No. It's nothing to do with weaknesses, though. It's to do with bullying in primary school, especially in China. Like, people draw a lot of lines, and I guess it's not in China, but of course, like, I experienced it when I was in China. It's something that I wish I wasn't.
Bullying like in another episode, because I actually had a lot of bullies in my primary school. Not a lot. A lot of bullying experiences in my primary school up until year four, because I was the lonely one. I think I heard a quote on saying, your kids get bullied not because they're not powerful enough, it's because they don't have friends. As soon as your kid have friends, they will not get bullied.
And that's why I really regret not being the one who stood up, like, or like stand beside the girl who was being singled out.
Right. And okay, we can get more into it. Yeah. So at year five, I came to Australia. So I started speaking English. So when you first start speaking English, you got to translate in your mind, right? I want to say this. Okay, 我想吃饭, I want to eat meals. And you have to translate that. But the progress...
eat meals?
I want to eat rice, okay, whatever. And when you translate that, I didn't stutter first when I was speaking English. My English was really, really fine. Like, in terms of no stuttering.
Yeah, I guess it's, again, like, paying attention.
Yeah, and in year seven, when my English started to become a lot more fluent, I can speak a lot faster, I can speak without thinking too much, then my stuttering started to kick in. And I think that in primary school, not a lot of people actually noticed my stuttering. And the two people... Oh, no. I took that back. Okay. So in my primary school, there was an activity called circle time. Have you heard of it? it was basically all the kids sat in a circle, and the teacher sat in a circle as well, and we share our feelings and our kind of thoughts during the week.
Right.
It was supposed to be a reflection circle. Yeah, it was supposed to be like a reflection. And there were many powerful moments that came out of that circle.
Really?
Yeah. I was surprised too, because there was a girl that's kind of disliked for no reason by a lot of class members at the time. And I didn't know why. And we found out the reason why she was, you know, considered unlikable. And she was lonely during the circle time. And a lot of the bullies that weren't really bully. It was kind of like making fun of her or something. I would say that's bullying probably. And ended up apologizing to her in the circle time, out in public.
Mm-mm, in front of everyone.
Yeah.
Out in public.
Yeah, sorry. During that circle time, and I was often really quiet because I was kind of scared I would stutter when I speak. And my teacher often cued me because she wanted me to speak more. And sometimes it's unavoidable for me to stutter because, you know, you get the feeling when you are scared of something that's going to happen, it's going to happen. And I often stutter. And just across me, there were two kids. They would often laugh and imitate my stuttering. And I would kind of traumatize by them. I really wish that I actually spoke up and told them how I feel. That will probably improve my stuttering faster.
Like facing your fears.
Yeah, yeah. And I kind of went along with it. I didn't really pretend. I pretend I did not really care, but I really, really cared. But all my close friends in primary school didn't really care about my stuttering. And they would just, oh, that's how he speak. I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
And I appreciated that.
Mm-mm.
And
because your stuttering, like for anyone who's listening who may have stuttering issues as well, or have experienced like similar things, I feel like if there's a grading, I don't know if there was, but probably is, for I don't know, speech therapy. Yep. Like if stuttering is. If stuttering is graded, I think you are not one of the severe
absolutely not
cases.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the most severe cases, they actually cannot speak a single word.
Yeah, I know.
And yeah.
Which is why.
For mine, when I stutter, I tend to repeat a lot of the first words three or four times. And other people stutter, they open their mouth, they can't make a word. I'm not sure which one is worse. I think mine is worse because if you just open your mouth,
they're obvious.
It's very obvious. Like people notice it.
Mm.
And the other people that...
No, I was actually going to say that because it's not a very severe case that I feel like people who actually know you will disregard this. It's more... Like, I mean, everyone has their own speech, what's the word?
Flaws?
No, not even flaws. Like,
habits?
Yeah, habits or accents. Everyone's got their own speaking habits. So,
Oh, I think another reason why that I really pay attention to my stuttering is my parents. Because when I speak to them, often in Chinese, I stutter. When I was young, my mom and my dad would get really, really frustrated and really, really angry and pressure me to say, you know, speak properly and speak normally, repeat the word that you just said.
Why?
I know it's really toxicating. Yeah. Like it's very toxic. I felt that I wasn't speaking normally. I was repeating a lot of the words, even though my dad was the one that, you know, started it. But
it's not really starting. Well, I mean,
yeah, but my mom was really, really serious on saying that, why can't you just speak properly? Like, speak properly. You can take your time. No one is fighting the mic.
I feel like it's because they didn't really understand
the issue.
Like, where this came from or why this happens. Yeah, which is the case with a lot of
mental illnesses. Is that what you're thinking?
Just, I guess a lot of misunderstanding between kids and parents.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say who is definitely right or wrong. Like, I don't want to point my finger and say the parents are definitely wrong, but I mean, it's their first time being parents anyways, but I still feel like even though it's not their fault, they have, people do have, they should take responsibility. Right? Like,
in year 11, when my mom actually did it again, and actually spoke out and said that when you say that, you make me more nervous. And my mom just replied, so I shouldn't do anything about it. And I just should let you stutter and continue to stutter. And I was like, okay, fine.
That's very passive aggressive, that answer.
Yeah. Well, that's a lot of, like, that's the normal for Asian parents, right? So when my kids, like if I have kids in the future, when they stutter, I kind of know how to approach it more, you know, that they appreciate the support and they appreciate you not pointing them out as the abnormal one. Whew. And I started making a difference. I started wanting to become, you know, I want to overcome stuttering when I started teaching because that often affected. I know I can teach well. I know I can teach the best, and it's just that I got to overcome the stuttering. Because when you stutter, you sound really unconfident. You sound like you don't know what you're talking about. And I really want to overcome that. And there were a few strategies that I learned on how to improve my stuttering. Of course, my stuttering was nowhere near as severe as a lot of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And so first of all, it was only speak while you're breathing out.
Mm-hmm.
Because when people stutter, they will often hold their breath and start to speak as quickly as possible. Then you start to lose your breath. Then you start to stutter. And another thing is changing a word. I got really good at it.
Right.
Because if you can't really say a word, I often put the in front of it.
Okay.
And I find myself stuttering on vowels a lot more, and things that are more explosive sounds like B, P, K, those type of sounds, I tend to have a higher chance of stuttering.
Okay.
And the third thing is that if I lack sleep,
right.
If I didn't sleep the night before or had a really poor sleep, I will always stutter more.
Mm-mm.
So those kind of three things that I kind of paid really attention to.
Did you ever try to seek professional help?
No, because, you know, with Asian parents, they don't really trust those. So I have to look out on resources online myself. And another thing that I read about is, you know, when you speak, always have a rhythm, like singing or having a like reading lines. You're always going to have a constant rhythm, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you have that rhythm in your heart, or, you know, just tapping, you're gonna avoid a lot of stuttering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this only for tips that are, you know, if you are a light stutterer or a medium stutterer, and you can improve. But if you are severe stuttering, and, you know, if you really have trouble communicating, I would strongly recommend to seek professional help, because
I feel like everyone should. I mean, even if it's not as much of an issue, if you feel like you are being affected by this, by stuttering or by other speech habits. Like, especially mentally, I feel like it would really help to, so for, like, for example, a professional speech therapist, or I don't know enough about this to pinpoint, like, what kind of help, but I feel like if you speak to professionals or speak to people who have shared the same experience, it puts things into perspective and make you understand that you're not alone in this. And even I feel like the mindset shift and the attitude towards this will change a lot of how you approach the problem or the issue. Yeah,
that's kind of the general thing that I started.
And plus, I think this is a very common thing.
I think it's quite common for kids when growing up have some sort of, at some stage, they're going to stutter and they're going to grow out of it.
And it's also very common, like even if we're not just talking about stuttering, even if we're just talking about people who really feel shy about their accent, right? Like it's very common as well, you know.
I think accents are quite different, in the case, because they can speak.
Yeah.
You just don't want to... you don't want to pay attention to other people's judgment, basically. You got to speak confidently with your accent, right?
Yeah. Yeah, actually, confidence is something good to bring up here because, so I read recently and it has made me, it's kind of perspective changing for me, that confidence is actually not about believing that you're always going to be great or you're going to be the best at something all the time. Confidence is actually just not about the success, but rather about how you handle failures. It should be about believing in yourself despite understanding that you're not going to be the best at everything, and actually believing in yourself that you're able to overcome fears and failures. It's what real confidence is. It's not about how you feel about, it's not about thinking that you're going to win all the time, because that's not true, and actually that makes you very vulnerable, and that kind of fake confidence is very easy to crumble, right? Because we all know that in life not everybody's going to win all the time.
That's quite powerful. It's like on how you can handle your failures and if you can face your failures, right?
Yeah. It's about believing yourself despite understanding that you're going to fail at some point.
With the stuttering, coming back to it, I think that, it changed my personality quite a bit. When I was young, I was quite bright and I often chit-chat a lot. I was the one in the family that chit-chat up. I was the speaking box, basically. I wouldn't shut up. But when my stuttering kicked in, I start to become a lot quieter. I become more introverted. I don't really want to talk to people, because when you have a conversation, I am going to stutter. I always try to keep my answers one word, if not two words, and try to answer as quickly as possible. Yeah, kind of like that. And
I feel like for this... just a random proposal came out of nowhere, but I feel like for this episode at least, or maybe for future episodes as well, maybe try not to edit your stuttering out.
Yeah, I try to do that a lot less, but I find that because
if it doesn't interfere with the flow of our conversation, I feel like it's okay to keep it in.
Yeah, maybe I'll try. Okay, if it's not too severe. If I can't pick it up.
No, I feel like you pick it up more than others. That's why.
Okay. Yeah, sure. I'll try to keep the stuttering in. Okay. Leave the gaps out. Yeah.
Yeah. Try it for this episode, because that's, you know.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to do on camera, because if I do it on camera, I can't cut those out.
Huh? How does that fit with?
Because I'm trying to force myself on not to stutter during a podcast as well. And if I record everything, if we record episodes on camera, then the audio and the video.
No, but you can apply the same thing here.
I'll try my best.
Yeah, you can just you can still use that mindset here. Tell yourself, just set it as a rule for yourself that you're not going to edit that out.
Yep. Okay.
And then try your best to speak, but if you still end up stuttering at a few words or phrases, it's actually completely fine. I think it's gonna be fine.
Yep. Okay. So stuttering changed my personality quite a bit. I was a bright kid. I was still bright even after I stutter. I've always, in the worst case scenario, I always look on the bright side.
Optimistic.
I am really optimistic. And I just didn't talk much. And Yeah, kind of like that.
So did okay. So you're saying basically, it changed your speaking habits. Do you think stuttering changed your personality?
It did. Yes, okay. Definitely. Because it changed the role that I play in a group setting. Because if there are three people walking back from school, okay, I was one of the three. I'll be the quiet one. I'll let the other two speak.
Hmm.
I'll be the listener.
Even when, even after you improved your speaking?
Yeah. It's kind of like a habit of mine.
Okay, so it stayed as a habit?
Yeah.
Do you think it stemmed from that time when you were really shutting yourself off?
Kind of, yes.
Okay, and this stayed as a habit. Okay.
And that's actually one of the unexpected good things that I got from stuttering. I became a really good listener.
Hmm.
And I think that's really valuable right now in the current society. Like, a lot of people are great speakers, but not a lot of them are great listeners.
What do you mean by a great listener? Or how
a
like,
great listener,
what does a good listener mean?
Great listener
to you?
Is quite simple, just shut up and listen. And you gotta, I think I, okay, so I, because my dad always had a pretty fast and pretty bad temper, when I was a kid, I often tried to guess on, you know, on how he's feeling without triggering his anger or anything. So I'm quite good at guessing people's, how they're feeling.
Mm.
So with that in mind, like I can, like during a conversation, I can quite efficiently make out on how the other person is feeling. And if they're uncomfortable, I'll try to change the topic. If I'm talking too much, I'll quickly, you know, redirect the conversation to them. And I think that together, all those different elements would constitute a great listener.
But do you think then that at the same time harmed your capability to be a better speaker? Like,
I'll say,
or did that change your desire toward that? Like, do you think it affected whether or not you want to voice your opinions as much?
I changed my attitude about giving advice to others. I know that's off the topic. So during a conversation, I would try to start off the conversation. And if the person doesn't start to speak, I will start to speak more. And if they start speaking, I will shut up and listen to what he or she has to offer. But in terms of on a topic that I'm quite confident about, and if the other person is not really knowledgeable about, I would very happy take over the conversation and start speaking.
So I noticed that when you talk about these conversations, you are always assuming a one-on-one scenario.
Yeah.
Is that because you think
that's
a better...
Because in a group setting, when I'm getting up on stage, I never stutter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it was only in small group conversations or it's one-on-one, I stuttered the most often, especially on one-on-one.
So the spotlight effect is actually good.
Yeah, the spotlight is really good for me. That's why I really like doing seminars previously, right? And I really like doing classes because, you know, you're all tensed up. You're very excited. I feel excited when going up on stage and I never stutter.
Mm.
But it's only, you know, in private or, you know, a casual conversation, I would really stutter.
In the future, do you think you would want to improve your speaking skills, be more proactive in this aspect because you get, because you feel like, you know, the spotlight effect is really good for you. Would you want to, does that affect your career choices or would you want to be more proactive in this aspect and, incorporate this into things that you do? Like, would you want to make more speeches and would you consider that a part of what you want to do for jobs?
So I want to be a teacher, right? And that kind of, you're always speaking in front of a large group of audiences.
Okay, well, large?
Larger group of audiences.
I mean, you can think bigger.
Yeah. Okay, maybe later.
And I think it'll be very interesting if you actually, like, I would be very curious to see what effect that has on your normal day speech. Like, for example, I would imagine that if you were to pursue a career that requires a lot of talking in front of big groups, presentations, seminars, conferences, and, you know, if that becomes a very...
getting used to it?
No, very important part. Yeah, not only do you get to practice more and get used to speaking more, but also maybe if you were, of course, to do this professionally, maybe you would actually seek like training in that aspect. And I wonder if that changes the
whole I don't think so, because one of the biggest thing, the stuttering doesn't happen at a large group setting at all. It's only for example, like a casual conversation that we have over dinner or anything like that, I will stutter. Because the mindset is different, right? When you have a conversation, it's different. You are more relaxed, right? You are more relaxed. You are more, you can say a lot more things. It's a lot more casual. It's a lot more intuitive
speaking. I guess, but I mean, like for me, if I just imagine that if you are doing a lot of talking for your job, doing a lot of talking on stage, but actually a lot of it is going, like a lot of other talking associated with big events happens across dinner tables. You know, not everything happens on stage.
Yep.
So, I'm just really curious if that kind of exposure would lead you to... to have more conversations, and whether that changes the whole thing or your whole perspective around speaking and stuttering. And I mean, I would be very excited if you actually, like, I see opportunities here. Like, if you do become a speaker and if you speak in front of thousands maybe and about things that you care about, and eventually if you want to, like right now, you're framing it as your weakness, but I feel like often in weaknesses, we seek opportunity. Like it's because that you see this as a problem that you care more about this than others. Like, I mean, for me, like I would be really excited to see you encourage young people about this, or like actually, you know, set up, I don't know, like helping platforms, et cetera, for people who think this is an issue and, you know, get people connected, because it's exactly because you went through this problem yourself. It's a very personal experience, and you've been through personally all of the misunderstanding and the judgments, the bullying, the suffering. Like, but it's exactly because of that you're able to synthesize with others in this way, and maybe then be able to offer help with this understanding in mind.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. Maybe this podcast could be the first step.
Yeah, exactly. And also, like, it also feeds back to another thing that I've been exploring, like not only for our podcast, but for Toru, for like whether, like if we end up being more creative in terms of our careers, like what is something that we want to share with others? And often, you know, finding your niche on the internet is about things that you wish you would have known 10 years ago or 20 years ago or as a kid. Like, what advice would you have given to your younger self? Because when you ask that question to yourself, you are exploring not only some of the things that you were a bit weaker in when you were younger, but also because of the journey that you've been through, like the skill set that you've gained, that you've acquired through like work and study. So you're combining both something that you deeply care about and have personally experienced with, so that kind of perspective, with the skill set that you have now. And that is, that creates a nice niche for you on the internet if you want to be a content creator. So So I randomly just framed your stuttering in that way.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I'll think about it. Actually, a couple of ideas just came to my mind. It's okay.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, that's some good thing that you can gain from this experience. Like, what did you think about? Like, would you want to log it here?
All the thoughts that I have right now is kind of still on the idea side.
That's fine.
I think that, so how do I say this? Because I read this on the website, like a lot of people do stutter in the Western society even. And under the YouTube comments that I saw are like stuttering people, when they die, they will go to heaven because they were living in a hell. And, you know, there are a lot more people that suffer from stuttering, and there are a lot more people that that couldn't speak, really, literally couldn't speak. And it's quite painful for them. And I'm not sure on how I can really help them, because there are some severe cases. I read on the news, it was a program called Behind the News. There were cases where people can never fix stuttering. They can only improve on how they speak. And yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe writing out would be a better option. But I don't want to go to the option saying that if you can't speak, you can write.
Because, like, avoid the issue.
Because
avoid facing
I think that as long as not too big of a problem, if you're making an effort on trying to improve on how you speak, I think you should celebrate on your
achievements, yeah.
and on how you able to speak now.
Mm.
And so it's just,
I mean,
a
maybe
few
people
ideas.
Are doing this already and we haven't done we haven't researched into this. But yeah, did you also want to share, so what you told me before about how the mechanism is not clear? So scientifically, there could be an effort to improve our understanding of this condition.
Yeah, when I was looking
on
how actually, if there are any drugs on...
Drugs?
Yeah, drugs on how
that's
to...
That's a bit...
Because I was kind of interested in making, in like...
Oh, actually, sorry for saying that's serious or severe, but I think, don't people actually do the...
Probes?
Yeah.
Stimulations?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. And but the general idea is right now, currently, that the mechanism of why people stutter, or there's an observation why kids at a growing stage will often stutter, it's not really clear. They know how people stutter, but the reason why most people go through a stage of stuttering, they are not really sure. And why people even, they will live with stuttering, they're not even sure.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So throughout this episode, have you thought about anything that you have encountered in life that maybe resonate with my experience?
No,
Okay.
Yeah.
Anything else you want?
Because I feel like stuttering is a very... biological issue.
So when I first brought up the topic that I wanted to do this as a podcast, like one of the episodes as a podcast, I think that you didn't really understand on, and I think you didn't really understand on why I wanted to do this, right? You were kind of unsure
about
the topic.
No, that's nothing to do with that's not because I don't want to talk about this. It's because I didn't want you to pitch this as a big weakness, because relatively speaking, I didn't want you to be targeted by others to think that this is a how do I say this? Like, a on the scale of impactful defects. Maybe this is not on the highest end. So, yeah, I just didn't want you to be
targeted
that,
like that
way. Yeah.
Why did I say that this is my biggest weakness? It's actually from an Ali's video, because he had a lot of problem with stuttering too. And when, in the past, he said that when interview asked him what his biggest weakness on stuttering, he just goes to that straight away. And I thought, yeah, I had a problem with stuttering. Why can't I just make that my answer? And I did try to make a lot of effort on to improve my stuttering. And yeah, so I'm quite proud on how, you know, how I improve my stuttering.
Did this experience change anything else? Like, did this make you believe in yourself more?
No, I was always quite believing in myself.
Okay.
I'll say I'm more conscious about how other people perceive me. I'm not sure that's a good thing or not. So that's not the right wording. I'm more conscious about how I speak can influence other people. It's not about the content. It's not about the thing I'm speaking about. It's about the way I deliver the message.
It's not about what you're saying, but how you say.
Yeah, it's about. Yeah,
it's basically about the drawing quote.
Yeah, maybe. Yes. So, I really, really value, or you know, trying to improve on the delivery method or the delivery medium. If that makes sense.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to add?
No.
Okay. What about your training? Where have you been training?
Well, I thought it was a nice place to end it.
No, let's keep going.
Why?
Talk about yours. Let's come on. Do you have anything to share?
Yeah, but it's very irrelevant.
That's okay. That's okay. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, so over the past week, one thing that I made some improvement on was my drawing skills with Adobe Illustrator.
Ooh, nice.
is that
drawing for
scientific
papers?
Drawings. Yeah.
Nah, okay. Why did you try to make an effort on improve that? Because?
Oh, because the paper was getting published and it has been now. Yeah, it was published yesterday. It was accepted for publication yesterday.
Mm.
And that figure, so it was quite a urgent rebuttal for us. So it was co-authored. So it was just a review paper co-authored by my supervisor and me. And the rebuttal was, so one of the things that the editor commented on was that the figure in the original manuscript draft was unoriginal, which it was. And so I basically had to draw it from scratch this time. Yeah.
Okay.
And I mean, so Adobe Illustrator, if you didn't know, is the professional is one of the professional illustrating
softwares,
yeah. Used by scientists, and yeah, it's made to generate paper figures. And I mean, I've always put off learning it because I don't know why. Well, because there's easier things. There's easier solutions
paint.
And more accessible. No, I never use Paint, but one of the quicker things to use is PowerPoint.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But PowerPoint, you know, has its limitations. And actually, once I start really using Illustrator, I just see how much better and easier it is to actually use the better
proper software.
Yeah. But it was also because I was trying to cut the slack. Like, I was just trying to find the easy way out. I didn't draw cells from I didn't draw things from scratch. I just used things like BioRender or the basically readily made icons and images that way, and just putting things together. And but this time I was proud that I drew everything from scratch.
Did you
it
like
was
the
actually
figures?
Very easy to learn, and yeah, I don't know why I put it off for so long. Maybe that should be my weakness.
did you like the figures that you drew?
And try to find the easy way.
Were you happy
that is
with
a
the
complicated
final?
Question.
Were you happy with the final drawings?
I have mixed feelings about this because for me, the whole experience was very rushed by the fact that I had to submit it within a day. And also because it's my first time drawing a figure completely from scratch, there were things that I feel like could have made it look more polished. You know, maybe if I played around with the coloring a bit more, or with the gradients, I don't know, with the outlines.
Like,
the
layouts,
there's a lot of things that I could have played with a bit longer to make it look more polished and professional, or like what I consider more professional anyways. I mean, everyone will have their own aesthetic preferences. But anyways, I wouldn't say that I'm completely happy with it, but I'm never happy with my own work. Like, and I spoke to my cousin about this as well. She's a She's doing her master's in design, and she's also a freelance graphic designer. And she said the same thing to me, like, so your figure, just to have your figure or your artwork just have to serve its purpose. Mm. And the artist usually is never happy, never 100% about their own artwork, which made me feel better. But anyways, I still feel like it was a bit rushed and I could have practiced the skill earlier, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, I was happy that it got accepted straight away.
Mm.
There was no problem and I was able to gain a new skill, improve on the skill.
Right.
Yeah, and next time I will do better.
Mm. Yeah, that actually reminds me. It's like if you do a drawing, you can... It's like no matter how good the drawing is, you always see the flaws in there straight away because you are the creator.
Mm.
And you often magnify those flaws. And when you present to other people, they were like, oh, this is great. And they don't actually see the flaws that you talk about, that you were very worried about.
Oh, maybe. Oh, there was also another added layer of anxiety because this is my first ever published paper. And this just made me feel super conscious about every word that I've written and, of course, and the figure that I've drawn for this. It made me feel like I really miss writing papers just for one assignment of that one course that, you know, nobody else is going to see except the marker.
Yeah.
Because
you don't get graded, do you? You got, no. Like, yeah, exactly.
Well, you get
feedback.
Yeah, the reviewer, the editor will make the call about whether or not they accept this and they think it's valuable. They do give you a grade.
Oh, actually. Really?
Yeah. I should have gone this up. But there's like, I think 4 or 5 categories on like, does it make a significant scientific contribution?
Mm.
Is this relevant to the purpose of this journal?
Mm.
Is it of good quality, etc.? And you get a rating out of 5 for each of those categories. So you do get graded, that's number one. We were able to receive quite good comments and reviews. But that's not the main thing. Like, I just felt a bit self-conscious for putting my work out there to the entire world for the first time.
Okay.
Like, I know it's very... I'm contradicting myself all the time. And, you know, in this case, it's... both. So I, as much as I do want to show the world of my work, at the same time, I feel super
scared,
self-conscious. Mm. Like, what if, I don't know, I look down on my work a lot when I actually have to do it, when I actually have to show everyone.
Do you think you are a confident person?
No.
Mm.
I think that's something that I'm trying to improve on.
Yeah. I think that could be your biggest weakness.
Yeah, so far, probably.
Mm.
Yeah, because in a lot of instances, I don't deal well with failures. So if we apply the model that I talked about before, you know, it's not about believing how good you are, but rather being okay and believing yourself no matter what, really.
Mm.
Like being very... acceptant and believing yourself despite knowing that you're gonna fail, etc. But I'm not the best at dealing with failure.
What are some failures that you have to deal with? Is there anything on top of your mind?
Oh, okay. So this is another thing that we can dig deeper into.
Yeah, maybe future episodes.
Yeah. But I mean, okay, maybe this is not very obvious to some, but I mean, it's very obvious to me, so let me share it. That's a lot of foreshadowing.
Finally, but, something.
But I wanted to say, like, successes and failures, it doesn't have to be grand. It doesn't have to be big all the time. And in fact, successes and failures every day it happens on a daily basis. Very, very frequently. And they are, so the majority, like 99% of your successes and failures are going to be very small. And so that also means that most of the time, only you are going to be the one that can recognize this as a success or a failure. So when I say that I don't deal well with my failures, and maybe probably also my successes, is
right. Because when
use
I have
a question to guide me.
Yeah. So whenever I have a, whether it's big or small failures, if it's big failures, I sleep on it and I just forget about it. And when I have small failures, I just say, oh, it's okay. I'm the best. Yeah, I have that very, I think it's the confidence that plays into it. No matter how many times I fail, I always have that thought of, I'm the best. I'm gonna be a very powerful person, and I'm gonna be a very successful person no matter what I do. I think in that mindset, I have that mindset kind of buried in my brain.
Why? Why do you think that is?
I'm not sure, because I think we talked about this previously, like in private. I've always, when I was a kid, I was always think that when I become, you know, bigger, I would be successful and influential and helping people. And even now, I do think that no matter what I do, I will be successful and I will be a great person. It doesn't matter what I do. I always have that thought that I'm going to make a difference. I'm going to eventually make a difference. Even if I become in my 30s or 40s, I will say, I want to make a difference. I'm going to be the greatest person ever. I think, not the greatest person ever. Like, I'm going to be a great person. I'm going to be a helpful to society. I'm going to contribute to society. I won't what do you call, down myself for failing. I was like, as soon as I fail, I kind of forget about it and I just move on. I think that's probably one of the biggest differences between you and me, because you sometimes dwell on your failures.
No, actually I don't. I don't. 100%.
Okay.
I'm sure on that. I don't dwell on my failures. And actually, I am a very resilient person. Like, I go through, because I fail every day, now failure is very normal for me. I'm not saying that I'm not confident because I am bad at dealing with failures, but rather it's just...
Is it how you perceive yourself? Like, how good you are at doing what you're doing, because I'm very sure that you are more like
criticizing.
Yeah, I think you are definitely more resilient than
I
am.
I put myself down a lot.
Yeah, like you question yourself a lot.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, and I don't question myself a lot.
Maybe you should.
I think that's, well, there's good and bad about it, right?
And I mean, okay, so these things is not there's no definitive answer for these qualities. But I feel like there should be, there is a optimal range for every person. It's going to be different.
That's arguable. No, I don't think so. Because in some cases, if you have, for example, like if Steve Jobs wasn't so arrogant and didn't really believe in himself, Apple would not become Apple today.
No, I'm not saying, I'm still on the you should question yourself and be reflective part. Like, you can be confident and believe in yourself no matter what. Yes, but there should also be something to balance that. Otherwise, it will just be a dickhead.
Okay.
Like, if there's no reflection, no self-restraint, no criticism,
I'm saying that
these two should be balanced.
So for example, if you fail at something, of course that you should be like reflective and, you know, you don't make the same mistakes again. And but if you fail at something, would you start to question your own ability and maybe think that, if I took that person's advice. It could be the, it, like it could be, it wouldn't be the result that I had.
Personally?
Mm.
No.
So why do you say that you are unconfident then?
Is that a word? Unconfident?
Unconfident, yeah. Not confident.
Really? I don't think it's unconfident. That doesn't sound right. Oh, that's actually right.
For once, I won at English.
Wow. Okay. No, I say I'm unconfident because I don't want to open up. I don't want to. I want to avoid the risk.
Open up, you mean open up to others?
Hmm. I try to avoid failing as much as possible. Like, because I'm scared to fail, I'm scared to try sometimes when I'm like interacting with others. But if it's actual, like, but I'm not, like, my confidence varies in different scenarios.
Of course, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, so...
So you're talking about the social aspect.
Yeah, social, or, like, the kind of task that requires me to put myself out there.
Okay.
And also, you know, it ranges from time to time. Sometimes I'm feeling very good when I'm achieving a bit more. Sometimes I'm more confident, but when I'm less confident, it's usually because I try to avoid failing at all.
Mm.
And sometimes that makes me very ingenuine. So
just to interrupt a bit,
mm.
When you say that you don't want to open up to others, right? And what consider a failure in a social aspect?
Like, I often think that I say things that make sound stupid dumb. Or naive.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah. Especially in front of my... sometimes co-workers. Yeah, well, yeah, nowadays in the lockdown, yeah, mostly co-workers, because all of them are older and more experienced than me. Mm. But I mean, if it's just a casual conversation... maybe it's okay. Mm. But I'm also kind of just, yeah, even if I'm talking to peers, I sometimes get scared that I'll mess something up or act stupidly. And yeah.
Right. Have you asked any questions in lectures in universities?
Yes.
Openly?
Yes.
Why do you have the confidence to do that?
I only ask when I'm very sure that it's going to work out.
Ah, okay.
Or I don't care, like, or I don't really care about that answer as much.
Yeah, like your confidence level is very, quite a bit
indifferent. Exactly, it changed a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does change a lot. And also another thing is, like, me putting myself out there, because I haven't been doing this consistently, but, you know, for example, asking questions in lectures or in tutorials, you know, some people say that after you do it once or twice, you will realize that it's okay and you don't get as self-conscious about it the next time. Yep. But for me, that hasn't been the case. Maybe it's because I haven't done it consistently, but it hasn't been like that for me. I have asked questions. I do put myself out there sometimes, but still, every time I approach this kind of situations that requires some kind of confidence and believing in myself, I still get very nervous and I still get scared of failure, and therefore sometimes I choose not to do it at all.
Right.
Mm. But when I say that I do deal well with failure and that I am resilient, it's when, like, just like on everyday basis, I get stuck on problems a lot and my analysis, like, doesn't work out 90% of the time, so it's okay for me to just try again, something like that.
That doesn't go with confidence, I'll say. That goes with resilience, right? How about not giving up?
Yeah, it's about how...
because resilience and confidence are two different things.
Mm. Oh, okay. Then it's about... maybe it's more about the fact that I don't believe that I can deal with the failure every time.
Okay.
Like, yeah, I don't know how to make it less scary for myself.
Why do you get scared? People will think of you less?
Yeah, but at the same time, I know that is mostly in my head.
Yeah, okay. So in the future, how do you think that you're going to improve on it?
I don't know now. No,
knowing that.
No, now I'm more confused.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, when you say this guy is confident, in some circumstances, he will definitely not be confident, right?
Mm.
So you can't really say that this person A is confident and this person B is not confident, because I'm guarantee you, if you put person B in a field where he is an expert at, he will be very confident and share his thoughts.
Oh, actually, that is not the kind of confidence I think I want to seek.
Okay.
Because I think what my goal is to be confident and not be afraid to put myself out there, even if I'm not good at that thing that I'm dealing with. Like, for example, I want to be confident to sound stupid or naive. Like, it's like I want to be able to speak up when I don't know what the hell the other person is talking about.
Okay.
I want to be able to be the only one in that seminar room who put my hand up and ask like the most basic question.
Okay.
Like, I think that's really confidence. Like, it's about like knowing that you are not the expert, but be super okay about that. I think that's real confidence.
Okay. So do you think that we're doing the podcast now is a kind of a step towards improving your confidence? Putting yourself out there, just.
Well, kind of, but I know I'm not assuming that there is an audience.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's
that's
okay
true.
For me.
So we made the three rules of about our podcast we haven't really discussed in the podcast. So our three rules is
three?
Yeah, I thought we are three. So the first rule is we're not gonna check the stats for half a year, right?
Mm.
And the second is we're not gonna tell anyone about our podcast until episode 10.
Until after 10 episodes have been published.
Yep. And the third one is we're going to do it weekly. Yeah.
No, the third one that you wrote here says separate internet identity, which I have no idea what it means.
I didn't write that.
You did.
Okay, cross that
out. Separate internet identity.
No.
Tell you rule number three.
No, we're gonna say that it's our goal to do it weekly. Yeah.
Wait, actually, No, we can't. Come on, publishing weekly is not even a goal. It's just
what we
just,
do.
Yeah,
okay, sure.
Yeah, it's just what we do.
Do you think it would be better for
us
to get rid of rule two? Like, we should tell people we're doing this.
The reason why I said only after publishing 10 episodes is because I was not sure that we're going to keep sticking to this.
Do you think that we're going to keep sticking to this?
That's why I said let's see after 10
I
episodes.
I think we're gonna keep sticking to this, because if we don't have an, like, if
see, this is a confident dynamic. Why are you so confident about yourself? Like, how many, come on, like, how many commitments have you stopped sticking to? Like,
yeah,
for 10 weeks.
No, I think that that if we get rid of the rule two. That is.
Oh, is it because you want me to know that there is an audience?
Yes.
But I think that doesn't interfere. That doesn't like number two doesn't interfere with that. Why would that interfere?
Okay. So.
Like, because I still know right now that after 10 episodes that we're definitely gonna have audience, but that doesn't matter. Like, I'm okay right now with this because, okay, I actually. If you didn't keep interrupting me, I was gonna say like we should play with rule three, the original rule three, separate internet identity. I think our goal is actually to be the opposite. Our goal is actually to be brutally honest and
so
do not separate
that.
Internet identity.
Yeah, change that if you want.
Yeah, it's like be super honest. I think that would help.
I didn't write three.
Doesn't matter, it's written here by someone some time ago. Yeah, but it should be not separating our
to
personal
be
identity
honest.
With
yep.
who we yeah, put on the internet, at least through this podcast. Yeah, and yeah, so far I have been very honest and not scared of putting myself out.
Because you know that there, right now there's not going to be any audience right now.
No, I guess it's because I have you with me. Like,
okay.
Every time you're the one sitting across from me directly, and I feel like I am speaking to you more than anyone else.
Okay. So do you think it would help for me to tell other people without telling you that I told other people?
That's breaking the second rule, and I will be angry at you.
No, I'm thinking that the second rule is quite dumb out of the three. I think it's the other, like the first rule and the third rule, I think it's really, really good, because I really don't want I really don't want our content to change and to be influenced, or, you know, where we have expectations on the numbers that we're going to get with the podcast. And the third one is, you know, that's our entire goal, is to be honest for the podcast. But the second one is, I get when you first say the first said that if we're not going to stick to it, you're not going to disappoint too many people, right? But
no, it's not even about disappointing. Like, who cares about our podcast?
Exactly. So why not just put yourself out there, and we're going to tell people about our podcast.
It's just because I want to have made a few more episodes.
I think right now we have four episodes in the data bank.
Yeah, so how far? We're not even far off. We're halfway there.
I think it's okay to tell people now.
No, I want to make more. That's all. And we have the topics planned. It's not like we're going to run out of things before. Sure.
Okay.
I want to make more. Okay. Because right now I feel like a few things are still quite messy. Like, I still want to improve a little bit before
that. We can improve over time.
You just have like no standards or reflections.
No, I do reflect. When I'm editing the audio parts, I know that some parts I need to improve, and some parts I tell you to improve as well. I reflect a lot, and I'm really, really I really want the quality to be good.
So I set the 10 episode rule also for ourselves to see our own improvement over time.
Yeah, we're going to get to 10 episodes.
Yeah.
So why not
let But I want to put in some effort for during this time as we train to make better podcasts.
Okay, sure. Okay, so 10 episodes, okay? So as soon as we recorded the 10th episode.
But come on, like, it's not like we have 100,000 people to tell. It's just going to be like two.
Yes, exactly. So why not just tell people? It's not going to make a difference. I think that you're still quite scared about putting yourself out
there. I'm not. But there's no point. Okay, so first of all, I don't have any... until I start seeing people face to face, I feel like there's no opportunity for me to bring this up.
Okay.
And yeah, and I'm not scared of others hearing this. Like, I know I probably just sound stupid, but I sound same as always. Like, especially to those who I'm close with, this is how I speak anyways. So
yeah. So I can tell other people.
What about our three rules?
Rules are arbitrary rules. These are arbitrary rules. I really think
arbitrary rules that we said we're going
I
to
I think
stick
that
to.
The second rule is really stupid.
I just went through explaining why it's not.
Okay. I'll accept it, okay? But I actually don't agree with the second rule, okay? But I'm going to stick to it. We're 10 episodes, then we can tell people, okay? All right, then. I think this...
Who would you tell first?
I'll just post a poem with you and says, hey, everyone, we're doing this podcast. If you want to listen to us, you can find us at...
Why poem with you? Why not something where you have more... Or like, oh, how about we make it a thing? How about we make it a thing for like both of us to post it on all our social platforms on the day that 10th episode is aired?
Okay, sure. Okay, I can do that.
Okay.
No. Because no, I can't.
Why?
Because there are some like the stuff that we talk about for Toru, there are some of the things that I can't share with people.
Exactly. So we can't share it with everyone. And also, you just trash talked your parents in this episode. And they're going to be like, what do you mean? We didn't say that. We weren't like that.
They can't understand us. We're talking in English. Okay. So 10 rules. Okay. 10 episodes. 10 episodes. Okay. Sure. Okay. I'm convinced. Sure. Okay. 10 episodes. And then we can
talk. And actually, about the Toru thing. I still wanted to say that, like, the more I think of it, the more I feel like, even though it wasn't our fault, we were very much responsible in the way that we handled that, and it wasn't the best way.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, even though it wasn't your fault, it was definitely your responsibility to notify people.
Yes. Yep. Mm. Of course. I think that even if the employee made a mistake, it's on me, basically.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah, but that's not what I'm referring to. Like, I just think for them, it would have seemed like the assignment was due on the 3rd, and you already said the deadline is over on the 1st.
Mm.
Like, for them, it would have seemed that the deadline was... Yeah, the due date was on Sunday, but you already said it was overdue on Wednesday.
No, that wasn't the case. I reflected on this quite a bit. And one of the things that I think that I didn't do wrong is this. It's because I let themselves set the deadline. And they didn't stick to the deadline that they set for themselves.
Oh, okay. And did you guys make it quite clear?
Yes. She would say that she'll get to it. And she would say that, I don't want to go back. I reflected a lot on how I can improve. So basically, I think I have to be a lot more direct because if you don't get direct, people might misunderstand you and people might think that that your request is not that serious.
Mm.
And so that's something that I really, really want to fix.
Mm.
And it's pretty easy to fix. I just got to change my wording a lot and kind of my attitude a lot. And not attitude.
It's pretty easy to fix, but I just gotta change my wording and my attitude a lot.
But it's just changing the phrases, basically, right? And yeah, with the rest, I think that I deal with it professionally, and I don't want to rule myself as the victim in the situation. No, absolutely not. I'm responsible for it. I don't want to pinpoint. I think that
if, you don't want to put the blame
on anyone.
Yeah.
Yep. And yes, I think that some of our listeners don't actually know the context, but I think we talk about in episode
2.
No, 3. Episode 3. If you want to know about the conflicts,
our teaching experience.
Yep. And just go over to episode 3 and you can hear how a very kind of bad thing happened with Toru Education Managing. And yeah, I think that this is a good place to end this episode. Don't you think?
Yeah.
All right, then. I will see you next week.
Next week. Bye-bye. Bye.